Good morning. Welcome to this episode of Under the Helmet. It's funny because we had one already taped with this guest, but so much has happened. I had to start over. I'm joined by Georgia Thrasher's defensive lineman. Sounds strange, but it's true. We're going to get into that. Marcus Singleton, good morning, my man. How are you?
Good morning, man. I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm all right. Now, before we get into the football part, we got to talk about the life part, because football is such a small part of your life, because it's, you know, it's, you have other things going on. You've had to deal with such tragedy and stress over the last few months regarding nothing football related, just life. How have you managed to fight through this?
Man, to tell you the truth, I really haven't fought through it yet. Like I said, the last game with the Horsemen, before that game, my auntie died. And then I got a call Wednesday that her daughter died. So it's just, I don't know, man. It's just a lot going on right now. You just try to keep your mind above ground because you still have a family. So it's just a lot, man. I don't think you ever can cope with death, you know, because it happens so often. So, I don't know, man. You just pray and take it one day at a time, man.
Now, with that, like I said, you have a bunch of family involved, and I'm sure that people lean on you. How do you manage to keep your head above water and still be there for those who need you?
I say a big part of that is God, man. God, he keeps me sane and a lot of stuff, man. But, like, for my family, everybody think I'm the strong one, so they lean and tend to put their problems on me. And then when I need somebody to talk to, I don't have nobody there. So, man, I just pray and try to keep my head above water, man, because it's tough right now.
Now, with that, you use football as an outlet. Explain what the last few weeks have been without playing.
Hard. Hard, because I can't pay nobody. It's real hard. But, I mean, this Saturday is up. You know what I'm saying? I'm ready to ball and just take out a lot of frustration. I just feel bad for who in front of me.
Now, one of those things that, you know, we're definitely getting into the process. Now, you wanted away from the Horsemen, and it's been something that has been discussed a million times, so we will just kind of lightly discuss, but the process itself, did it take longer than what you thought it would be?
Yeah, I think it really took longer than what it has to be, because if you stop and think about it, it's free football, and people are putting their life on the line for football. So when you have somebody who's trying to hold you back from going to another organization, it's kind of hard, man. The process is long because that person don't want to lose you. But at the same time, it's free football, and you got to let a person do what's best for them. So that's all I have for that one.
Now, with that, have you talked to any of your former teammates and your former coaches since then? You know, is there making amends to say, you know, like words, or just more of like a clean break? I'm going to do what I'm doing over here. Y'all do what y'all do over there.
I mean, it's both. I mean, they reach out to me also still, ask me why I left. And once I break it down to them, they get an understanding of it. But at the end of the day, I just had to do what was best for me.
Now, with that, you are a Horseman for a long time. You know, your entire career has been played for pretty much one franchise. How different is it to step into a new situation knowing that you played with the same people for the better part of, what, 8, 9 years?
I mean, it's no different. You just bring the leadership and the understanding of what you have to the game and just hope that your teammates and everybody buy into what you bring to the team. I mean, it wouldn't be no different than LeBron leaving Cleveland and going to Miami. It's no different.
Now, with that, you're stepping into a situation where people are regarding the Thrashers as a title contender, a serious threat. You have other defensive linemen. You have an edge rusher in Darius Gillette that you are familiar with from your days as a Horseman. What is playing with a new team and a new system and a new franchise? How exciting is that?
It's very exciting. You know, me and Cam, we have our battles. We go back and forth. Chris Barrett's a defensive coordinator. And what I like about him is he listens. So if a player come up to him and tell him what they see, he's not going to bash him and be like, nah, this is my defense. You do what I say do. Because people always tell you buy into the system, but what coaches don't understand is the system is the players. You get what I'm saying?
You can't have a system.
So if you're telling us to buy into the system,
mm-hmm.
we are the system. You got to believe in the system. You get what I'm saying?
I've always been a thought of, I mean, I could be wrong, but I've always been a thought of a coach should be able to implement a system around his players and be able to use the players he has in adjustments. Like, there's rigid right or wrong. It's more of like, okay, we have this type of player and this type of player and this type of player. We need to kind of work them into the fabric of it. That's just me. Yeah. I could be wrong.
Yeah, that was my thing. I agree with you because if you have dominant D tackles, why all of them are not on the field at the same time? You get what I'm saying? It makes no sense to a point, and then you said, oh, we'll change it, and then you don't change it. It's back to the same thing. So at that point, I just had to remove myself and go to an organization that will really use me and know what I can bring to the team instead of somebody player-hating. I'm talking about you babying players. It's not babying. If we've been doing something for years, why come change it? You get what I'm saying? I guess you could say it's a sort of complacency, but at the end of the day, if it works, why change it?
It is definitely it is adjustment. I mean, what's the mindset going in? Like, we had talked and you left your beloved number zero with the Horsemen and you're going to go with number 11. Even something as small as a uniform number change, what does that mean to you?
For me, the number don't make me. The number never made me. I made the number. So I can put on any number in ball. See, some players get caught up in a number. I don't care about a number. You can give me 99, 54, I'm still going to make it do what it do. And that's what people forget. The number don't make the player. The player make the number.
And you're going to play in a system that, I mean, playing for it, you know, like I said, you have a deep rotation up front. And people are saying that the Thrashers pose one of the bigger threats along with the Georgia Cobras to the Mississippi Dynasty. They have a dominant offensive line. Being a defensive tackle, what does it mean, or how do you control your excitement of playing against a great offensive line?
For me, I would say it's not even controlling it. I like to see what you do on the first play. Like I previously said, if I see you're looking at me and you're flinching, I'm on you all night. So, I mean, great old lineman, I give him prop, but it's hell to deal with somebody like me for four quarters. And then adding me to the Thrashers, I mean, what more could you ask for?
It's a lot of talent on that team, and it's – when we come back from break, I want to talk about nonsense that happened off the field in Georgia. Nothing to do with anything with the Thrashers or Horsemen, but nonsense about people who can't control themselves on and off the field. You are listening to the Black Tuesday you're listening to the Under the Helmet podcast, sorry, on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with Under the Helmet podcast. Terrence Biggs, Marcus Singleton. Marcus, everyone knows that there was an incident last week at a game in another league. Now, here's the questions. I have questions as not being from Georgia or Atlanta. Why does it seem like, you know, this is a common occurrence, or is it a common occurrence?
I would say because people don't know how to conduct themselves as adults. Everybody want to be gangsters, tote guns, and show that they bad. But at the end of the day, gangsters move in silence. You don't have to portray yourself as the gangster, want to shoot everybody. Man, I mean, it's just crazy once you think about you have kids at the game and people want to do stuff like that. So I think it all comes to people's character.
Now, to me, I'm old in my mind. I've always been a thought of if there's ever been a problem with somebody, you take it outside, you take it in a parking lot, you handle it with your fists. That's the way I was taught. Why do you think some of these modern dudes just abandon that thought?
Because they can't take an ass whooping. They don't know how to fight. And it's cool to get a gun and use it instead of using your hands. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Everybody can't fight, and everybody can't take the humiliation of getting an ass whooping. So they have to go to gun.
Now, do you see that happen a lot around the football culture in Atlanta? Like, folks are just about that life and can't leave about that life off the field?
I mean, yeah, no, it just depends on the team and the people that they bring into the organization. So I think that all falls on the coach because I say people show you their true colors before you even say you want them on your team. You know what I'm saying? Some people just get them for talent and don't realize the backbone of it when they come to their team. And then they be like, damn, I shouldn't have brought this guy. But if you coached and looked at your team, you should have knew what you could bring to your team to help your team out better.
Do you think that coaches and organizations fail in doing that because they're so driven, want to win, they just either don't care or ignore it completely?
Yeah, I think they just want to win and they forget about the person that they bring and the baggage that that person brings to the team with them.
Now, some of these teams, they also forget that when these incidents happen, these cities, these parks and recs people, they don't want to give up stadiums or fields. Do they realize that, you know, what they do today might cost another team next week or next year from getting a field? Like, how
My
difficult is it
thing
to
is,
get a quality field in Atlanta?
I mean, it's hard now with all the BS going on. Then plus you got COVID. So, I mean, the owners know, but some of the players are selfish and they don't know. So,
Now,
that's that.
for me, it's interesting to watch. And like I said, the only exposure to Atlanta before this year, as far as semi-pro, was I was watching a Kings game against the Venom a couple of years ago, and they had a field. On God, they had a field that had rocks, like brick, like rock walls around the field. It's somewhere in Atlanta. I forget where, but one of the players from the Venom ran headlong into it. And what teams don't understand is that, you know, you play in such a big city and there's money to be made. Why don't you think that some of these teams don't really understand how to draw fans doing it the right way?
I would say they do, but some of the owners probably are skeptical of the players that they have. You get what I'm saying? So why would you bring a player to a nice field if they just gonna fight and, you know what I'm saying, bring foolishness? At the end of the day, semi-pro is a business, so you gotta look the owner's name are on it. You get what I'm saying? That's it's on that. So
True.
I wouldn't say it's so much of the fields. I say it's so much of the owners trying to cover themselves.
Now, as we talked about in the open, you have had to deal with a lot of off-field stress as far as family life. Physically, you haven't played in a few weeks. Are you physically ready to play tomorrow? Or tomorrow, right?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Are you ready to play?
Yeah, I've been ready, man. The football field, it's work, man. You got to work at your craft. So I'm ready, man. I've been running, get my wind up. So them little 5 weeks ain't gonna hurt me.
Now, during this season, people don't really realize that from the outside that a lot of football players still exercise, still lift and all that. Do you lift as heavy during the season as you do in the off season, or do you just kind of keep it as a regular pace?
I got a personal trainer, so we just set up for we do hard, heavy one day, and then we just do cardio the next. So cardio is really what I try to focus on to get my wind up. Because last season I was 385,
Oh, God.
now I'm 305 and it's toned. So I mean,
How
people
did
are really in trouble.
you play at 385, man?
Man, I'm just a beast, man.
How did you not get tired?
Man, it's funny that you said that because some people be like, "Feature only go for feature only go for like three plays." Are you stupid? I'm a defensive tackle, fool. In the NFL, they rotate. That's why I just came up with the word of goofy. They goofy, man. Some people don't understand football. They just play it.
'Cause 385, and not just 385, but 385 in Georgia when it's hot, which means pretty much during the football season. Like, what people don't understand in different areas is how warm it gets down south. What was the
Yeah.
hottest game you've ever played, like temperature wise, and how did you make out?
Man, I would say when we was in the IAFL with we played the Seahawks. Man, I think that game was like 102. It was hot, man. It was
And
real hot.
humid and humid. Like, people don't say, like, there's hot and there's like southern sticky muggy hot, which is like it feels like the sun is like in your back pocket or in your face. Right. Now, post game, after say that the Thrashers win tomorrow, how will you celebrate your first win as a Thrasher?
Me, I go watch film on the next opponent. I think we have a bye week next weekend. So I'll just be studying the next people we play. I don't know if it's the Cobras or not, but I'll be studying the next team. That's how I really celebrate. And people don't too much watch film. Film shows you a lot.
But you're in Atlanta, and you're watching film on a Saturday. I get it. I mean, I respect it, but there's no, like, having a beer or having, like, a good plate of food after the game. You go right to film study?
Sometimes I just be on the water fishing, man. I just love the water. So if I watch film, get up by 6, I watch film, and then I just head to the lake, start fishing.
Now, do you catch and keep or catch and release?
Oh, I'm fat, man. I catch and keep.
Smart man right there. I was worried because I know a whole bunch of people like, oh, I just do it for the sport. I'm like, if my ass is out there and I got a rod and reel in my hand, I'm not going to sit there and let the fish go. No, you're coming in the bucket, buddy. You're about to hop your ass in the bucket. You're probably going to meet some cornmeal somewhere and be fried.
I know that's right, man.
Now, one of the things that, you know, we talked about influential rappers the last time we spoke. Now, who do you think is the newest or youngest rapper in Atlanta that should be making a name for themselves within the next couple of years?
That's kind of tough, man. My new rapper, I would say, probably is DaBaby. He makes some good music, man. His name already out there, but he coming up, not DaBaby, but yeah, I think it is Baby, something like that. He likes getting it with dreads, but he make good music, man.
Now, over the years, like, people in different areas of the country, be it L.A., New York, even down south, what makes Atlanta now, like, the capital of hip-hop? Like, it has taken the crown, so to speak.
And I wouldn't so much say it's the capital. I would say it's the scenery. Everybody want to come to Atlanta, you know what I'm saying? And then if they make Atlanta Motor Speedway the Top Golf, like they saying, and make gambling legal, Atlanta's really, really going to be booming then.
Now, as someone from Atlanta, like you mentioned, everyone from up north, that is their goal. Their destination to head to Atlanta and live there. How are y'all trying to keep folks out? Because it seems like the population has grown way too much.
Man, I don't know, man. It's hard to tell people not to come to Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? It's booming right now. So, I mean, everybody want to come out here, go to the club, strip club, get good food down south. It's kind of hard to, like, try to keep people out. You know what I'm saying? It's a tourism. Everybody come and try to visit and tour. You know what I'm saying? They hit the strip clubs for the wing.
If you didn't live in Atlanta, what other city would you want to live in?
I would go to Houston, Texas.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I can see it. It's big, and there's a lot to do, and price is not bad. Now, like I said, I want to wish you good luck tomorrow. As always, condolences to you and your family during this time of traumatic loss and grief. Marcus Singleton, thank you so much for joining us today on the Under the Helmet podcast.
I appreciate you, man. You be safe.
Thanks, man. Be safe. This has been an episode of the Under the Helmet podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.